Welcome back to another episode of Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler. On this podcast, we explore all things related to thriving and flourishing in life. There are three fundamental truths that inform not just my podcast, but my coaching as well. And they are, number one, the future can be changed. You are not stuck and you are not trapped by your predictable future. Wherever you are right now, it's just your present state. It does not determine where you can go in life. Fundamental truth number two, you can change your future. This might be the best news of all. You don't need to be rescued by someone else. You can do that for yourself. In other words, you can be your own hero. And fundamental truth number three, you do not have to wait. Too many people think that they have to have the perfect plan or all the knowledge or all the skills before they can get started. Nothing is further from the truth. I've coached a lot of people in my career, and trust me when I say that you can learn whatever it is that you need to learn along the way. The key is to start. If you've listened to the podcast before, you'll probably know that we find stories and experts who shed light on these different areas so that we can all flourish and thrive. Let's dive in to today's episode. My guest today is a sought-after spiritual teacher, personal transformation coach, and leading voice in the breathwork community. He has traveled the world offering inspiring and transformational retreats, combining psychological and spiritual teachings with lasting and life-changing effects. An award-winning, critically acclaimed author, he has spoken at numerous universities and conferences and on the TEDx stage. His new book, Awakening the Soul of Power, was described by multiple Grammy Award winner, Gloria Estefan, as a balm for the soul of anyone searching for truth and answers to life's difficult questions. His name is Christian De La Huerta, and it's time to meet him. Christian, welcome to the show.
Bobby, I'm so happy to be here with you. Thank you.
I'm so glad that we finally made this happen. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, born in Cuba, been in the U.S. since I was 10. And I've been doing personal transformation work for over 30 years, retreats, workshops, up until 3 years ago when, like many of us, I had to pivot and create virtual online programming. So I now offer a year-long virtual coaching program, which is really fascinating because I'm starting up retreats again and they're amazing.
Yeah.
But what I've noticed is that the year-long, by spreading out the teachings and over the course of a year, delivering it piecemeal, it makes the transformation a lot more sustainable.
There's something about that. It's almost like a slow release, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one of the things you said, and I know from neuroscience that there's a lot of proof that when you take like three really slow, deep breaths, it does a lot of good things for the brain, right? But yet when you tell that to someone like, oh, just take a breath, there's that pushback, like, don't, you know, like, yeah. I have real problems. Don't tell me that.
Right.
So, can you speak to that a little bit, why it's so valuable?
You know, it's, and I get it, you know, my dad was a psychiatrist, my degree's in psychology. Mm-hmm. I was on a track to get a PhD until I had my first breathwork session 33 years ago. And I got to tell you, it changed my life. Even that first session, I jumped tracks. I never went for the PhD because it works so fast and heals so profoundly at so many levels. I don't know anything more effective in terms of healing past trauma, like emotional trauma that we've all had some expression of, and even physically. And I know that sounds too good to be true just from breathing, but you know what? I can't argue with the results. It works. And they haven't studied it. Pardon?
Right? It does great things for the brain.
It does. You know, they haven't really studied it to the degree that they studied meditation, like what's happening in the brain, what's happening in the body. So much research on that. Mm-hmm. And multi-level benefits of that. They're just now starting to research what's happening in the body when we breathe in this conscious, intentional way. Here's what I find most powerful. It's not a scientific explanation. It's more a psycho-spiritual explanation. But if you think about it, in most religions and spiritual traditions throughout the world, and even in some secular languages, the same word, one word, can mean breath or spirit, depending on context. And so if we think about that, the breath is our most loyal. It's our most steady companion on this journey of embodiment, of being alive in this on this planet. And to me, that's what kind of helps explain it, even though I know it's not a scientific explanation.
Right. In the talk, you even said you had to connect it to feedback, because that was like the theme of the conference. I loved how you started your talk like that. Like, how am I going to do that? But you said your breath is feedback, right? Like specifically, you talked about like if you're really the shallow breathing. Like, what does that tell us if we're just shallow breathing?
Yeah, it's the first thing that happens when we get upset. When we have either we're stuck in traffic and we start getting angry and upset and frustrated, or you know, if we get afraid, like if some you know like something scares us, first thing that goes is the breath. Like
that's right.
You know, we stop breathing or we start taking really really shallow breath. And that's what anchors all those emotional energies in the body. Because what used to be spiritual teaching that everything is energy, now we know from quantum physics, it's all energy, including this chair that I'm sitting on and this mic in front of me and the body and the emotions, all of it energy, all of it vibration, even if it feels solid. And so we know too from physics that energy cannot be destroyed. So all those multiple countless times in our lives when we have stuffed our emotions, when we have swallowed our true feelings because we didn't want to rock the boat too much. We were afraid of hurting a relationship or ending up alone or abandoned, whatever the underlying fear is. But all those repressed emotions and unhealed past traumas, they don't go away just because we don't want to look at them. They get stuck in the tissues of the body. And then after years and decades, we walk around with layers and layers and more layers of repressed emotional crap, which we start projecting and dumping on each other's lap. Yikes.
Yeah, it's exactly what happens because it doesn't go away. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah, it only gets worse.
It only gets worse. It really does. With the breathing, it reminded me of, I had adult onset asthma, came on when I was about 25. And it was, I don't know, 5 or 6 years later, we'd moved up, maybe more than that. Yeah, about 6 years later, we'd moved from Chicago to Portland, Oregon. And I met a naturopath. And she told me, and at the time I'm like, I'm not into the Eastern medicine, that type of thing. You know, I'm like, I'm from the Midwest, blah, blah, blah. And she said, you know, in Eastern medicine, they say that asthma like that is caused from like, it's a wound. It's an emotional wound, right? Because your heart or your lungs guard your heart.
That's right.
And she said, so it's unresolved grieving or something like that.
Yeah,
and I thought, oh, that's ridiculous. You know, And then I started doing some really deep emotional work. And, you know, with adult onset asthma, it's not supposed to go away. It's typically a lifelong thing. When I went through that work, I no longer have asthma.
Yeah.
And that made me think, there's something to this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing when we think about it. And it's not surprising to me because I've witnessed countless healings like that.
Yeah.
It's truly amazing. Connection between the emotions and the physical body, they're pretty much undeniable.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah. So with the breath work that you teach, because you said they can take up to what, an hour and a half, some of the sessions. Wow. Yeah. Like just, can you give me like an overview of what that looks like?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I do a private session, because I do one-on-one and I also do groups, and I've done, you know, groups of 80, 100 people with assistants, you know, people who train with me to also offer it. If I do a private session, you know, the first part of it is, you know, coaching, getting to see what's going on with you. Where are you being stretched by life? Where are you being challenged? And part of it is getting a little bit of history to rake up the muck, like you're talking about, because we've been so efficient at suppressing this emotional stuff that by asking certain pointed, intentional questions, we kind of, you know, rake that muck that's been lying under the surface. And then we breathe. And, you know, like amazing stuff happened because on top of the healing that happens, people have amazing, extraordinary shift in consciousness. Like often I'll have people tell me two things that are really interesting. I've been sitting on a meditation cushion for 20 years, 30 years to have that moment of no mind. So it creates like a shortcut, a direct path to meditative states. It doesn't replace the benefits of regular meditation practice. Whole other conversation. The other thing that people will often say is like, well, I got to the same place to that same state of being that I have on a sacred plant medicine journey. Because it takes us to that unitary state, like takes us, pops us out of the limitation of the small ego identity, the sense of I-ness, separate personality. This is Christian, that's Bobby. Mm-hmm. And it pops us into the you know, our connected, the part of us that's connected to everything.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing, actually, when you think about it, how powerful it is.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because, like, sometimes, like, the same thing will appear in different forms, right? Because I love cross-country skiing. I love road cycling and stuff. So I'm always learning about all these different things. And there is, it's called HRV. It's some kind of app, and it measures your heart rate and the variance and all this kind of stuff. But in this app, they talk about different breathing exercises, you know, one for reducing stress, one for improving performance. I mean, it's showing up everywhere. So it's just interesting when it keeps showing up.
Yes. Yeah, there's so many, like breathwork is a large umbrella term, and there are a lot of breathing practices. If anybody's ever taken a yoga class, breathing is an important component, or even Tai Chi or even the martial arts. It's woven into that. It's who we are. Breath is life. It's what animates us, what keeps us alive. So in that sense, it's not surprising that it's so profoundly healing. And it still kind of blows my mind when I hear some of this stuff. Just that some of the like physical healings are the ones that are most surprising to me. The ones that are like just miraculous, for lack of another word. Mm-hmm. Magic at work.
Yep. And it's interesting too, because a lot of it, it's this ancient wisdom that's been passed through the generations. And it's almost like we're just kind of rediscovering it and how powerful it can be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I know in the in your talk, you talked about a gal who had gone through it and like she thought the person had snapped their fingers.
Oh, yes.
But it wasn't. Can you share that story real quick?
Yeah. That's to me, like, that's, I have so many stories that I can tell, but this is like my favorite one that illustrates physical healing. And it was my mentor, the woman that I learned how to do this, you know, decades ago. And so when she experienced it for the first time, she was doing a one-on-one session. And so she was lying on the floor breathing. And at some point she heard the facilitator snap her fingers. For some reason, it triggered a memory she'd forgotten about when she was 5. And I forget what the argument was about, but she got in an upset with her daddy and she was going to run away from home in a huff, got on her little bike and she started pedaling and hit a pothole or something, fell over, broke her nose, was black and blue for 3 weeks. At the end of the session, she turned to the woman and she goes, "Wow, how did you know to snap your fingers at that moment?" It triggered this memory I'd forgotten about. And then I made all these connections about how that experience had impacted my relationships with men throughout my life. And the woman was like, "I didn't snap my fingers."
Yeah.
So as they kept on talking about it, what they figured out she'd heard was the cracking of the bone. The next day, 40 years later, at 45, she got up and looked in the mirror, black and blue, all over again, not for the whole 3 weeks, but for like a couple of days while the body, you know, shifted itself and corrected itself. And it just, you know, it just goes to show how the body retains trauma and how it heals itself.
Yeah. The body and the mind are so amazing. Like it's such divine creations. You know, there's so much to discover about it. Oh, I loved that story though. So thank you for sharing it.
Of course. I love that story too.
Cool. Well, let's shift to the book a little bit, right? The Awakening the Soul of Power, right? And it's won multiple awards. So do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yes. So let me zoom out and start by saying that most of us have an ambivalent, and I might even say conflicted, relationship to power. Part of us wants it. Part of us is afraid of it. And the more that I dive into this work and retreats, which I've been doing for about 10 years on this theme, and specifically with women, women's empowerment as well, the more that I realize that what we fear is that if we really stepped into our power, if we really beed all of who we are, that other people may not be able to deal with it or handle it, and that we might end up rejected and alone. And who wants that? We also fear that we might abuse it. And no wonder. Abuses of power have we witnessed.
Too many,
any given day. All we got to do is turn on the news and boom, you know, there's one. Not to mention all the ones in our personal lives. And then I think we've been conditioned to believe that it's a bad thing, that power corrupts. absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And who wants to be corrupted? But the thing is that they forgot to tell us, or didn't tell us intentionally, that Lord Acton, who spoke those words, was speaking specifically about political power, not personal power. So when you add to that mix the fact that we've also been conditioned to be afraid of the emotions, we hate conflict, we avoid confrontation. And so what happens is that we end up giving away our power, our innate, inherent power that nobody can give to us. Nobody can take away. We are the only ones who give it away. And that's the most tragic part from
my perspective. We give it away.
We give it away. And we settle. We settle for less. We settle for an illusion of security. We say yes when inside, we really feel no. Inside, it's really not okay with us. But to settle for that illusion of peace or security or acceptance, we override our feelings, our beliefs, our dreams, our desires, our preferences, and we settle for crumbs of pseudo-love. And so it's not a good strategy. And so what the book talks about is like, how do we step into power in a different way? That is not about hierarchy, control, fear, force, domination, manipulation. How do we do it in a way that doesn't require that we push somebody else down, step on them, in order for us to feel powerful?
Yeah, I love that, because I've always thought power doesn't mean stepping on other people. Like, that's not a powerful action.
No.
If you have to do that, you're not powerful.
Exactly.
So a minute ago, and I want to get into how we do that, but you said we give it away. And you said, like, you know, we're afraid and everything. Can you speak a little bit more to how do we give it away? How have you seen people give their power away?
Oh my God, we've all done it. You know, how many times have we overridden what our preferences, you know, our beliefs, what we wanted? How many times have we said yes when inside it really wasn't okay with us? That's giving away our power,
not
because of fear of conflict, fear of whatever, rejection. But the things, like, if we're connected to what we're talking about before, those energies, because that doesn't feel good. Every time we've done that, it doesn't feel good. And so all that repressed frustration, and we turn that anger inward on ourselves, like, there, you did it again. You sold out again. And we stifle ourselves. And that stuff only gets worse. It festers under the surface.
Yeah.
And then what happens is we repress. And then the next unfortunate one says something to us the wrong way, and boom, volcanic eruption, because we just, you know, that was it. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. Suppress, going back to energy can't be destroyed. Those energies, those emotions have to come out one way or another. And what happens is they start seeping out and showing up as physical symptoms. Cancer, heart attack, stomach ulcers. So we've got to get this. We've got to get away. We've got to figure out a way to own our power and learn how to express it in a way that is a match with who we are. And the same thing with our emotions. Can't run away from them.
No.
And when we have to learn how to feel, how to know what we're feeling, and how to communicate it responsibly, right? Not like a 2-year-old having a temper tantrum. It's like, but in a way, and responsibly means owning that it's our energies, it's our emotions. Nobody can make us feel anything, right? Unless we allow it. Mm-hmm. Unless we've got a little wound here that got triggered, that because somebody said or did something. But we have to own it. It doesn't make it okay what they did or didn't do. It's not even about them. It's about our response to it, and which is really the only thing that we can manage, that we can control. Because we're not going to manage anybody else's behavior or emotions. Hang it up. Give it up.
Yeah. That's a path to nowhere.
Exactly.
A painful path to nowhere.
Exactly. But we can manage our response. And it begins by becoming aware of why we do the things we do, and why do certain people trigger us, and why do we do certain patterns in behavior and relationships? Mm-hmm. Why do certain people, you know, trigger our giving our power away and others don't? And that's that process of becoming more and more self-aware, then we can choose rather than just react subconsciously.
Right. Self-awareness is so important, though, because it is what allows us to make a choice, to make a better choice.
Exactly.
And to choose a response.
Beautiful. We can't do anything about what we can't see.
No. Yeah. So how does someone go about, I don't know, bringing forth their power?
Well, this, some of the stuff we're talking about today, first of all, realizing that they're different types, right? Mm-hmm. So I talk about in the book, I talk about worldly power or ego power, egoic power, in contrast to spiritual power or soulful power.
Ooh, and so, tell me about those two.
So worldly power is how we tend to associate power. So we tend to think that people who are powerful, you know, people who are famous, people who have money, people who are high up in some kind of hierarchy, whether it's the corporate ladder or some other kind of institution. But the thing about all those kinds of power, those expressions of power, is that because they're external, they're outside of us, they're fickle. Right? So here today, gone tomorrow, as opposed to the internal power, the soulful power, the spiritual power that nobody can give to us. Nobody can take it away. Like we are the only ones who give it away. So then part of that pattern is, part of how we own that is getting clear about the patterns. Who triggers me? In what kind of relationships do I give my power away? Is it mostly with authority figures, bosses, parents, coaches, you know, some kind of spiritual leader? Is it in romantic, intimate, sexual relationships, right? But it begins by becoming aware of our patterns and our triggers. Mm-hmm. And here's another good difference. The worldly power always has an agenda. It's always trying to get something for itself. And it's self-aggrandizing. So it's blowing itself up to seem bigger than it is. Contrast that with spiritual power, that it's about service, about making a difference. The servant leader, the servant, you know, king or queen that holds the power, but it's not because they get off on it, it's because they use it to make a difference in other people's lives and in the world. And it doesn't need to prove anything to anybody. So it's humble. So right. I think of a Gandhi or a Gandalf from The Lord of the Rings and their simple monastic robes, their sandal feet. From looking at them, you would never know how much power they hold. Mm-mm. Until it's needed. And then get out of the way. Like if you think about it, Gandhi brought the British Empire to its knees when it was at its highest point in terms of global influence and global reach without ever shooting a gun or landing a single punch. That's power.
That's right. And it's all personal. Like it's inside.
It's inside.
Yeah. Okay. So I really like the question when you were asking, you know, who triggers me? Because I can see that some people would have, you'd have patterns, right?
Exactly.
Certain types of people are in certain types of situations.
Yes. And we have our own. Like, so say, for example, mm-hmm. say you and I have a friend named Joe, and Joe is always late. And, you know, I have lunch with Joe on Mondays. You have lunch with Joe on Tuesdays. And so there I am. It's like, I knew it. I knew that I should have either scheduled it earlier and told him I was going to be here earlier. Or I should have just not had lunch with him because he's always late and he's so inconsiderate and so selfish and he only cares about himself. And then Joe gets there, and because we hate conflict, we put on a fake smile and we don't say anything, and we start throwing, you know, sarcastic comments and barbs, mm-hmm. right? Whereas you, there you are on Tuesdays, like, oh, great, Joe's late, 20 minutes. I'm going to, let me answer that phone call. Let me go through my email real quick. I owe this person a call. Let me go through the news. Like so many possible responses to Joe's lateness. And by the way, it doesn't excuse his lateness. That's a whole other conversation. But it's, why does it trigger me? And it doesn't trigger you, right? So if we were going to like really unpack this, I would do something like this. All right, well, let me get really honest. Because what we do is like, we blame them, we point the finger, mm-hmm. and then nothing happens, right? As long as we're pointing the finger, there's no possibility for healing because everything stays unconscious and subconscious. But if we're willing to do the work, and it's not easy, but it is so worthwhile, because what we're talking about is freeing ourselves. Because
that's right.
If I'm not aware of this, I'm always going to be beholden to Joe or to anybody who shows up late, right? Because it's my lateness button.
That's
which
right.
I have, and you don't have. So all it takes is for anybody to figure out that I have a button for lateness, and all I got to do is show up late, and they got me.
And you're going to be triggered.
I'm going to be triggered, right? So that they've got control and power over me. Man. So if I want to free myself from that, I might do something of it. Well, let me get really honest here. It's not about Joe, because it's not just Joe. It's when anybody shows up late, it triggers me. It gets me. And if I get really honest, let me zoom out. It's not just about lateness. It's when somebody cuts me off in traffic, same response, really pisses me off. When somebody cuts me off in conversation, same thing. Okay, all right. So I'm beginning to see patterns here. And so what am I feeling? Because these are blind spots. We have to get clear. All right, so what am I feeling? Let me think about this. I'm feeling disrespected, dishonored, not cared for, and feeling not valued. I'm feeling like I'm not worthy because he's only caring about himself. He doesn't care about me. And so, so it's really not about the lateness. It's that somewhere in there, deep in there, there's a feeling that I'm not worth being taken care of, that I'm not worthy of respect, of love. It's like, so that's the button. Not fun to see, but now I can do something about them. Right? Right. I can heal that. And then I'm free. Then anybody can show up late and I have freedom of choice. I don't have to be reacting to something that doesn't even have to do with them. It's something that's related to probably something that happened in childhood, in relationship to our parents. Maybe they had a moment of overwhelm or they reacted and they said something the wrong way and we took it on personally as like there was something wrong with us or they didn't love us, whatever it was. Like none of it real.
Just misunderstandings.
Stories, misunderstandings of young minds that didn't know any better. That's it.
Yeah. And then we carry it into adulthood.
And they impact every one of our relationships.
That's right. And it's so funny, Christian, that you brought up the thing about someone who's always late. I have a friend who's always late. And it's like, okay, to me, it's like, she's going to be late. Like, it's just going to happen. So I always have a book with me, you know, because I just know. Yeah, you know, but now some people get like really upset because there's like, and you know, they concoct all these stories about what it means and why she's, and I'm like,
exactly.
She's just running late, man.
Which is a whole other story. Like we can get into what's underneath the lateness, but that's not my job, right? That's her job to figure that out.
Right. Okay. So a question that came to me when you were talking about that is part of the problem there, like we're not speaking up about what we need.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we're not good about setting clear boundaries.
No. That is always, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
That seems like it's always something that people have a tough time doing. Have you found that as well? Setting boundaries?
Always. They have a hard time doing it. Yeah. And I know it myself. I used to. I know self-doubt, right? Because that all stems from self-doubt and poor self-esteem. Like if I really said how I felt and put like real clear boundaries, then other people might just say, well, screw it. I don't want to hang out with him.
That's right.
So we fear at the bottom of it, we fear like abandonment or being alone. And so we override what works for us and what doesn't work for us. And we settle.
Yeah. It's something I had to learn. And when you said that it is about the, am I going to be accepted? Am I going to be rejected? What if they leave me? I had an experience. It was back in 2005. I had what I thought was a really good friend. And over time, it was funny how it happened. Because over time, she began like just these very subtle jabs. Yeah. And then they become not so subtle. And because they started as subtle, I didn't notice them right away. And finally, I'm like, wow, this isn't okay. And I was talking to my husband, Rick, about it. Well, he was my fiance at the time. And I'm like, I'm kind of nervous about talking to her because I don't know how she's going to react. And suspected it wasn't going to be very good. And he's like, you know what, though? But when you take the authentic action for you, you get the right result. Regardless if it's the result you want. Because I even said something like, well, I don't want to jeopardize the relationship. And then I thought about it and I thought, well, it's already in jeopardy because you can't treat me that way.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And so that's the fine tuning of it, right? Because if we tell them, well, you know what, Joe, you can't treat me this way.
Yeah.
Right? We give them, this is it. This is the last time to that other ego mind that doesn't even know what an ego mind is. Say, oh yeah? You're going to tell me what to do? Let's just wait. Right. So, but if you're communicating in the way that you were pointing to, which is like, let's use that same example. You know what, Joe, like whenever you show up late, I feel disrespected, dishonored. You know, I don't feel like you value our relationship and I want our relationship to work. I love our weekly lunches, but I got to tell you, you know, I don't like feeling this way. Can't we do it a different way?
Yeah.
And then see what he does with it, right? But we're not pointing the finger. We're not giving ultimatums because that's what we usually do. Like, you're always late. You always do this. You never do that. And then that only causes a shutdown.
Yeah. And I don't think most people are trying to shut us down. I don't think they're trying to like make us feel disrespected. Maybe some people are, but if they're a good friend, hopefully they'd be. This was 2004. My little sister called me on something I was doing, and it was something that it didn't even occur to me. It just didn't even occur to me. And I was like, I felt terrible because I'm like, I would never want you to feel that way.
That's right.
And so once she brought that to my attention, it's like, okay, well, then I need to change. If this relationship's important to me, I need to change the way I'm showing up.
That's right.
And take me maybe a day, Christian, because she didn't raise it. Like it wasn't a pleasant experience. But when I thought about it, I'm like, you know, I think she's right.
And that's human too, right? The first response is like to get hurt, to get angry, to feel attacked. But if we like take a pause and not just do the immediate reaction, you know, hurt them because they hurt me, or yes, we perceived it as a hurt, then once that anger energy dissipates, we say, oh, you know what? She does have a point. And it's like, and I don't want, you know, her to feel unvalued, uncared for. It's like, all right, like if I value this relationship, then I will change my behavior.
Right.
And from our perspective, you know, if I had this conversation with Joe and I had it one, twice, bare my heart to Joe and let him know how I felt, and Joe's still like, well, screw you, it's your problem, then we have a choice to make about that relationship.
That's right. That's a different conversation. Oh my goodness. Because that can happen, right?
It can happen.
Right. And maybe that's okay.
It's okay.
It's dated that's part at that point.
And that's exactly. And that's our clear boundaries. You know what? Because at some point, if I put up with that, then I'm the one who's doing the disrespecting.
That's right.
And I'm not going to disrespect myself for anybody.
No. Shifting gears a little bit, because there's a couple more questions I want to make sure I get to. Sure. I know in the book, you talked about, how'd you say it? Like bringing forth your own hero or, you know what I'm saying? Can you speak to what do you mean by that? And how do we do that?
Yeah, this book is part of a series of three. I'm halfway done with the second book, which is on relationships, like how to do relationships consciously.
Ooh.
And so the series is called Calling All Heroes. Like, what does it mean to live a heroic life in the 21st century?
Mm.
And hero, I know, is one of those words like teacher or healer that I struggle with that. And by the way, unlikely person to be speaking about heroism and personal empowerment. Like my entire adolescence was one long depression. Mm-hmm. And I know self-doubt. I know self-hatred. And flash forward to today, like no matter what happens in my life, no matter the details, the circumstances, whether a relationship works out or doesn't, whether a project succeeds or fails, never, ever do I question my sense of self. My self-worth is unshakable. And so I know, like, what if that can happen in me, it can happen in anybody. And that's the process of that I share in that book.
Nice.
And so heroism, like, you know, we tend to externalize it. We tend to project it out. Like, oh, heroes. And we think of a warrior or a first responder or a firefighter or something like that. You know, somebody who places their life at risk for the sake of somebody else or a cause. And I think the pandemic helped us expand that definition so that we now include our healthcare practitioners, doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists who literally place their lives at risk. And
right.
Then I would even include delivery people and grocery store clerks who made so many sacrifices to keep the rest of us provided for. But what about the rest of us?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what this book is about. You know, it's like, how do we identify and unlock the hero within, because there is one inside each one of us. And so, you know, a couple of examples about what that means. If to go through life unconsciously, like just reacting to what people say or do, anybody can do that. Anybody can do that. And that's why we get caught in these power struggles, because they do something and then we do something. Until one
louder?
Of us explodes. Exactly. Or stronger in whatever way. So
it does not.
So bringing choice to the equation, like, oh, ouch, that hurt. Taking a breath so that I don't react. Taking a couple of breaths and then saying, all right, how do I want to show up? How do I choose to show up in the situation so that I get off this boring merry-go-round of they do this, I do that. They do this, I do that. Boring. We've done it 1,000 times and it never ends well.
Nope.
So this is like, how do we, let's do this differently. let's figure out a way to do this differently. And to react and to splatter somebody against the wall, anybody can do that. To
take
that
powerful.
Pause is like, ooh, that's the stuff of heroes. It really is. To be willing to dive within and to ask these questions that we're talking about. What triggers me? What, you know, what's really underneath that? You know, my those feelings of not feeling good enough and not feeling valued, like we don't want to see that. That doesn't feel good. But it is heroic. To be willing to face our inner demons is heroic.
It's the toughest fight you fight.
Yeah, exactly. And it changes everything. It will change our lives and every one of our relationships for the better.
Yeah. And the world around us.
And the world around us.
You know, because when we're not showing up in that ego and that, you know, trying to prove our self-worth all the time, things become so much more peace around us.
Oh my God. And if we expect for there to be peace in the world, it's got to start right here.
That's right.
It has to
start with us.
And
that is heroic.
It is heroic.
Yeah.
In this world of ours, it's heroic. It's taking the road less traveled.
I think there's so much, you see so much, and you see it on TV, like reality TV, there's so much I can't watch, but you see it all the time where people are, it's like a display of power, but what it is like bravado and yelling and I'm going to show you. And it's like, that's not power.
It's not power.
No,
it's
the opposite. Yeah. It's pseudo power.
It's over. You're right. It's the opposite. It's overcompensating for not feeling powerful or not feeling good enough. So I got to put on a show.
Yeah, it's exactly.
And there's a price to pay for that. You know, because we all do that, but in particularly men, right? Who walk around like these uncaring, unfeeling robots because we think that's powerful. That's not power, that's prison. And there's a price to pay for that because it's been conditioned into men. You know,
that's
little
right.
Boys don't cry since we were kids. Little boys don't cry. Why is that? Like, if we look into that, why don't little boys cry? Because only little girls do?
Right.
And so there are a couple of faulty assumptions in there. Mm-hmm. One, that the feminine is weakness, mm-hmm. right? Because that's what men are so afraid of, to be called, you know, sissy or to be called girly. But wait a minute. You want to talk power, strength, courage, resilience? Let's talk about the power of creation that resides in a female body. That's power. And then the other assumption is that the emotions are weakness. It's like, wait a minute. Emotions aren't weakness. They're not strength. They're not good. They're not bad. They're just energy. Like everything is in creation. Depending on how we express them, they have a good or not so good effect on our relationships. But right. In and of themselves, they're just energies coursing through our body.
Yeah. And like I said, it's what we do with them.
Exactly.
And you said something a minute ago when you were talking about the men and how it's a prison, right? When it's, you kind of get locked in that. What's the prison?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for bringing me back to that, because the prison is a prison of expression. This is what it means to be a man. Wait a minute, that's not what it means to be a man. That's very limited and limiting perception of what it means to be a man.
Yeah.
And what masculinity is. And so, yeah, and the price that we pay for that is this. You know, if you look at longevity studies, women outlive men by 5 years in the U.S., globally by 7 years.
Wow.
Let's look at the rate of suicide. In the U.S., a man commits suicide 4 times as frequently as women. In fact, 70% of all suicides in the U.S. are committed by middle-aged white men, which is interesting.
Wow.
Because that's the group that still holds the majority of the power in the world. So we would think, wow, they would have all the benefits and all the privileges, and they would have the best quality of life. But they don't, right? So what's going on here? And I think it's because this is such a horrible prison to live in. And because there's what we're connecting it to, the emotions, right? They start showing up as physical symptoms, those repressed emotions. So it's not
Great
a
point.
Good strategy. Not a good mm-hmm. strategy. Yeah, I said that. So the book, I dedicate and have a particular message for women. Mm-hmm. And that comes from my belief that the empowerment of women is the single most important thing that needs to happen in the world. Not to idealize women, not to put them up on a pedestal. Women also abuse power. Maybe disproportionate, but maybe in more subtle ways in relationships. So it's not about that. And it's certainly not to give women more crap that they have to clean up in this world of ours. It's because as a world, as a species, which have been running very off balance between the masculine and the feminine, which is all over creation. In the rest of creation, there's balance between the masculine and the feminine energies. It's we humans who have turned the feminine into weakness that deny it and have made it something less than, something weak, which is not. And so that's part of the problem. And I think when women are in 50% of power in this world, we're going to have a very different relationship to war and poverty and hunger and education and social justice and how we treat the environment, to all of it. And so that's the reason that I think that is the most important thing that we need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think that the balance of the two types, you know, and also I was thinking about what you're saying about men, and from such an early age, there is the, you can't cry, you can't show emotion.
That's right.
You can't comfort each other.
That's
you
right.
know, I That's saw, right. this was many years ago. It was these two little kids. They were both boys. They were outside playing. And the one fell, and it was a hard fall. You know, when you're young, you hit your knee and it hurts like the Dickens, right? I don't care who you are. That just hurts. And the one little boy went over and he put his arm around him. He was trying to comfort him. And there is one of the fathers around. He's like, don't comfort him. He shouldn't be crying. It's like, he's bleeding. He's young.
That's,
you know,
that's tragic. That's tragic. It's just a little kid crying.
Because he hurts.
Because he hurts. And emotions are good. You know, emotions are just energy. Like, we only get in trouble with them when we suppress them. If you notice the little kids, they have their emotions freely. Mm-hmm. They have a total meltdown. And a minute later, they're playing like if nothing happened.
That's right.
Like, they don't get stuck in their emotions. We get stuck in our emotions because we suppress them and we try to not feel them.
And think about it. Every time we do that, how long do we hold on to them?
Oh, my God. Oh,
right?
My God.
It could be a week later. You're still thinking about it. It's like,
it can be
you
have a
been
lifetime
better off
later.
Talking about it, right?
It can be a lifetime later, and we're still holding on to that anger.
Oh,
to,
God,
or
you're
to
right.
Being...
You're totally right.
And there's a price to pay for that.
Wow. I didn't know that about the suicide statistics. But you're right. Anytime that we're suppressing emotion, it's going to come out somewhere. Somehow.
Somehow, sometime.
Yep.
It
has to. I had, this was a year and a half ago. I had Josh Freeman on the show, and he is the president or CEO of 6 Seconds, which is an emotional intelligence organization. And he talked about it like emotions are like a train leaving the station. If you deal with the emotion before the train's left the station, you're far better off than if you let the train get up to full speed, right? Because it's a whole different game then.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah.
So
I use the metaphor of nip it at the bud before you go over the waterfall.
That's right.
Because once you go over the waterfall, it's too late.
It's too late. And it's too hard to recover.
And we cause harm, sometimes irreparably, to our relationships.
And that's when we find ourselves later thinking, why did that set me off that way? You know, why did I act that way? Because we know that's not who we are in our heart.
That's right. That's right.
But we've just gotten the better of ourselves.
That's right. We reacted. Mm-hmm. Right? And there's a whole, the first part of the book is understanding the ego mind, because that's the part of us that takes things personally and that reacts. And it reacts and then regrets. Because it's inevitable, right? We react and we say something or we do something, and then then that adrenaline dissipates, and then we go into like punishing ourselves. Oh my God, I can't believe I said that.
That's
right. I can't believe I did that. It's like, I'm such a horrible person, right? Then we start punishing ourselves.
Yep.
And
You're exactly right.
It's boring. Like, how many times have we done that? Boring.
Too many times, but for too many people though, they stay stuck in that.
No, I know. And it's tragic. It's unnecessary. It's optional. Once you understand, then it's optional.
Yeah. That's amazing.
And we can free ourselves from that react and regret cycle.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean wimping out. It does not mean wimping out. We're talking about empowerment here, but learning how to do it in a way that works, how to do it in a way that you're not going to lock horns and get stuck in yet another power struggle.
Yeah. Wow. And it seems like, you know, it all starts with this, you know, what we've been talking about here today, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Love it. So where can people learn more about the book, about the work you do?
The book is available wherever books are sold. So you can order it at your local bookstore if you want to support them. And if you still have one close by, and you can also get it on Amazon. in terms of reaching me, probably the best way is my website, which is soulpower.com, soulpower.com. And for anybody who goes to my website and gets on my email list, and we all know how easy it is to click unsubscribe down the road if it doesn't work for you, and I'm certainly not going to take it personally. I know how overwhelmed we all are with email in our inboxes. But anybody who does, we'll send them a sample chapter of the book, and it's the one that talks about what it means to live heroically.
Nice.
We'll send them some power practices, which are designed to integrate the teaching so that they don't stay at the level of information. Because Bobby, you and I know, and I think we all know, that we don't need more information. We've got information overload. What we need is transformation. And that only comes from really living and taking on, living from and taking on a set of teachings. So that's what those practices are designed to do. And then we'll send them a guided meditation that I created in the midst of the pandemic, which talks about how do we find center and maintain that center in the midst of chaos.
Love that. That's a great offering. I hope people take you up on that. And just to wrap it up, I think we touched on this earlier, but I want to come back to it. When you talked about soulful power, would you define that for us again as we wrap up here?
Yes. And it's the type of power that comes from within and that is self-referenced. It's referenced from internal, so we don't need any external validation. And it doesn't require us putting anybody down or stepping on them in order for us to feel powerful. It's a match for who we are. And it's no less powerful.
It's more powerful.
I think so. I think it's more powerful.
Yeah. Thank you for repeating that, because I thought that it bared repeating and it was a great way to end. So thank you. And thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. That is so meaningful for me to have you say that, Bobby. And thank you for having me on the show. And thank you for having the show, because I know that you're touching many, many people. And thank you.
Thank you. And that's the goal, right? To help other as many people as we can live better lives.
Yep.
I hope that you enjoyed that conversation. Here are some of my favorite insights. Number one, your breath is feedback. One of the things that he said is that shallow breathing is usually an indicator that we're hardly present in our bodies, and likely we are lost in the labyrinth of our mind. Number two, we've become really, really good at suppressing quote unquote emotional stuff and past wounds or trauma. And these don't go away on their own. When I was in my 20s, I was working with a therapist to help me make sense out of the abuse from my childhood. And one of the things that she said to me is that you can run, but you cannot hide from trauma. You have to do the work and move through it. And that, I've got to tell you, that was some of the hardest work that I've ever done in my entire life. But I didn't want it to follow me for the rest of my life. And I think that the more you try to hide from it, the more it follows you. Number three, when we try to suppress our trauma, and think broadly on the term trauma, but when we try to suppress our trauma, we actually suppress our personal power. Number four, I think it's a fascinating question to ponder. Am I afraid of my own power, like Christian had suggested? Number five, we can't do anything about what we cannot see, which is why awareness is so important. Number six, once again, it really stood out to me how much we get caught up in the stories that we tell ourselves and how inaccurate those stories typically are. And I loved how Christian phrased it. These are misunderstandings of young minds that didn't know any better. But we hold on to these stories often for a lifetime. Number seven, self-doubt leads us to not set healthy boundaries. And then we end up settling and ultimately not being happy. And our relationships are less than they could be. Boundary setting is essential. Number eight, which actually is really more of a call to action, but let's get off the boring merry-go-round of, you know, someone does something to me, so I'm going to respond this way or react this way, and then that's probably going to cause them to react even worse, and then I'm going to react even worse, and then let's stop that, right? We can do better, and it starts with working on that inner game, our inner selves. that's where we put an end to those games, that merry-go-round. So I want to give a shout out to all of you who have subscribed. I really appreciate that. And hey, if you haven't done so already, now is a good time to hit that subscribe button so that you never miss another episode. And before we wrap up, I wanted to let you know that something I'm kind of excited about. I have a new offering on my website. When you sign up for my free newsletter, Find Your Forward, you get a free 5-day email course on the fundamentals of finding your forward. Think of it as a jumpstart. And I hope that you'll check it out. Give me feedback. Let me know what you think. And as always, I hope you have a fabulous week and that you thrive no matter what.